We acknowledge that we are on Treaty 6 territory, the gathering grounds of many diverse First Nations, Métis, and Inuit peoples whose footsteps have marked this land and whose presence continues to enrich our vibrant community. Hello and welcome back to Research Recasted, the Knowledge Mobilization Podcast. I'm Brooke Listician and I'm here with Natalie Smadis.
Hello everyone!
We have a special episode for you today. As part of Student Research Day, we have two bonus episodes. On today's episode, we are here with Sierra. Hello, Sierra. Thank you for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Can you give us a little bit of an introduction about yourself and maybe like the program that you're in?
Okay, yeah. I'm Sierra Roth, and I'm a fourth-year political science major, but my minor is history, so this is where this research topic comes in, is actually for one of my Christian history classes. And my history prof told me not to say that I'm a political science student, but here I am.
I'm going to ask you first kind of how you got into student research.
Okay. I took a 300-level Christian history class. So this is where I started my interest in the Valentinians. But I didn't start really getting into the deeper research of them until my 400-level Christian history class. And that's when my prof recommended that I take this into a research poster to present at the Humanities Research Showcase, and that's kind of where I left off with this. So.
Very cool. What was it, the Humanities?
It was the Humanities Research Showcase. I think it was like early February. Yeah.
What is that kind of about?
They just take people from all different majors in the humanities, and I'm assuming that the prof does recommend people, like if they have a really good project. Mm-hmm. To present. I ended up getting third place in the humanities research thing. Someone from, I think, classics presented on Plato and they got second place. And then someone from a Spanish class presented and they got first place.
Is that just at McEwen or is that a...
It was a McEwen thing. Yeah. Yeah.
Very cool.
Super cool. Yeah.
So we're going to get into the bulk of it.
Okay.
Can you explain a little bit about the paper that you did in this research?
Yeah, for sure. So I focused on an ancient Christian sect. So this was before any councils, because there was Christian councils that kind of whittled down what the main Christian beliefs were. So this sect, they're called the Valentinians, and they were founded around 140 CE. So that's like about a century after when the historical Jesus would have existed. So this is a very, very early version of Christianity, and it's very, very niche, I guess, compared to what we would think of Christianity today.
Interesting.
So Valentinians were founded by Valentinus, who was educated in the Greek school of thought. So you definitely see a lot of like Platonic influence in this belief system. I think there was maybe traces of Valentinianism up until like maybe the 500s. But by then, they would kind of be persecuted out of existence, per se, by Orthodox Christianity because their beliefs differentiated so much from what we would consider like Catholic Christianity today or just like mainstream Christianity.
What was your interest in kind of taking more of like a look at religious history?
I needed a place to fill in my schedule. So I took a Christian history class, but I ended up really enjoying it. In my first Christian history class, it was more broad about the beginnings of Christianity. So when I found out about the Valentinians, I really latched onto it because I read like Plato and Aristotle in a political science class, but I found that their beliefs, the Valentinians' belief system, really coincided with Platonic thought. So that's why I found myself getting really interested in them. And also, I think people usually think of like maybe like the Reformation is a big point when Christianity like branched off and stuff. But it was interesting to look at like the very, very early beginnings of Christianity and see how there was totally different belief systems like right from the beginning. It wasn't just like one foundational church. So
can you give an example
of like the beliefs?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So actually in this project, I focused on the bridal chamber, which was a ritual like the Eucharist or like baptism would be in Christianity. And baptism and the Eucharist were also rituals in Valentinianism, but the bridal chamber was probably like their most massive one. But obviously this is not something you see in other Christian sects. And the bridal chamber mostly coincides with the idea that the Valentinians see the creation of the world as like coming from where we were once with God, and Jesus and everything was all together in what they'd call like the all or the pleroma. The world came to be when the pleroma kind of fell apart. So the idea of salvation for the Valentinians was returning back to God and recreating this all.
Cool.
Can you just go a little bit more into your paper and your research study?
Yeah, for sure. So to get to the bridal chamber, all sacraments supplemented salvation for the Valentinians, but the bridal chamber is the most essential, I think, in my through my research, because the bridal chamber takes a soteriological precedence in Valentinianism because it offers to reunify humanity with the divine, and soteriological is just like salvation. Like it's a very salvific ritual because it has that act of reunification, which kind of encompasses the whole Valentinian belief system. So I don't know. I'll start with, so there's the myth of Sophia, which is kind of the Valentinians' like world creation story, like kind of like Genesis, but not exactly. So original existence, like I said, was the all where the Father existed with people, with all his creation, with the Son, with, they're called the aeons, and they're kind of like divine essences. So, and one of these aeons was called Sophia, or like the knowledge aeon, but they called her Sophia. So she was the youngest aeon, and she wants to know the Father so bad, but she doesn't have the capacity to because the Father is kind of like this infinite being, right? So she ends up falling away from the pleroma because she can't grasp the Father's true form. And then her descent creates the inferior realm, I guess. So she falls out of, like, the limit is what they call it. So when she falls, she ends up having, like, she's distressed because she's separated from, like, her original form and her original form with everything else in existence. And in her distress, this creates, like, the material realm, I guess. Not necessarily humans yet, but, like, the material.
Like matter?
Yeah, like matter, exactly. Yeah, perfect. And then she starts crying out to, like, her other aeons to, like, help her and bring her back. And when they, like, answer her call, she then feels joy, or she feels a little bit better. And this ends up making, like, the matter of the soul then. So now you have material and soul. And then when she ends up being able to return back to the pleroma, so, like, back to her original form with the all, her joy from that creates matter of the spirit. So then those are, like, the three types of form on earth. And then because there's like those three types of matter now in existence, she kind of like employs like the demiurge, and this is kind of present in other early early religions. The demiurge is like the creator God per se, but not like the Father as again we would know in like modern Christianity. But she employs the demiurge to then make humans out of the material and the soul matter. But she then, like, puts spirit matter into some of these human creations, I guess, is how humanity came to be. That's how the Valentinians believe that humanity came to be. So that kind of just shows, like, we're fragmented from the all. So that's why there's the purpose of wanting to, like, return back to the Father through salvation.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's very cool.
Yeah,
that's like, interesting. This is probably not right for me to say, and some people are going to get maybe offended, but like Bible stuff to me I think is so like metal, so like gothic. It's pretty cool. So what was your conclusion from this research?
So my conclusion from this research is basically, out of all the rituals that the Valentinians have, baptism, chrism, which is like anointing with oil, the Eucharist, like the bread and wine, redemption and bridal chamber. And out of these five sacraments, the bridal chamber is the most important to the Valentinian belief system, because it totally encompasses reunifying with the all, because the bridal chamber, it's like, there's not like completely like a scholarly agreement on what it really was. And even like in ancient times, so there was like Irenaeus of Lyon and Clement of Alexandria, they both had different ideas, even though they were like ancient scholars, and even though they were both like witnessing the Valentinians, even they didn't have like the same idea of what really went on with the bridal chamber. But the bridal chamber, the idea of it was to offer a reunion between the material and the divine realms. So either it's like metaphorical, like you are imitating like the divine by like, and of course it's called the bridal chamber, so I'm sure you can kind of get where I'm going with this, but like the Gospel of Philip says that death began when like woman and man were separated. So the reunion, if you can catch my drift, either that is like a real physical thing that you undertake, or it's a metaphorical thing that you're trying to like imitate the divine, because there was kind of this belief that the Aeons, as I mentioned earlier, the Aeons also like engaged in reunification. But was this actually like a literal practice that they did? And there was like a list that you had to hit while you were doing the bridal chamber? Or was it, again, more just like you are believing in a certain way and that's the bridal chamber? So it's not completely, unfortunately, the evidence is very sparse, but yeah.
Interesting.
Saucy.
Yeah.
Thank you for being with us today. That was fun.
Thank you. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
That was Sierra Roth.
That was very interesting hearing about all the ancient Christian sacraments.
Next, we talk to Navree Gill about the lore of vampire literature.
Hello, Navree. Thanks for being with us today.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
So I'm just going to get you to start. Can you introduce a little bit about yourself and the program that you're in here at McEwen?
Okay, my name's Navree. I'm pronouns she, her. I'm in the English Honors Program in my fourth year.
What is the English Honors Program?
Honors is honestly like the main difference between like an English major and an honors is that you would have to do a research project, like independent research project. And then there's just like a couple like more specific classes you have to take. But I think the research part is like the most big difference.
So would you say that's kind of how you got into student research, was through that program?
Definitely. I feel like there's like a lot of people who don't like writing essays. I've been writing a lot of essays because of like finals right now. And everybody I've talked to has been like, could never write that many essays. I would hate to do it. But I feel like if you pick your own like subject that you want to write about, it's really interesting. And like with the independent research project, you could pick literally whatever you want. And that was very interesting.
Did you always kind of have an idea that you wanted to do research, or was that just something that came with that program?
I do want to like continue on with English, like going on to like a master's and like maybe even like a PhD eventually. So research is part of that, but I didn't think that I would do research like in my undergrad ever.
So we're going to kind of go a little bit more towards your research. What was your research on? What did you base it on?
I'm looking at the evolution of the sapphic vampire through different media and like through different times. So I'm starting with Carmilla, which was like very far back, like further than you would think. And Carmilla also was written before Dracula, but I feel like Dracula is seen as like the classic vampire. I wanted to like focus on literature. Like it started with Carmilla because I feel like I've always heard about Carmilla. I really liked vampire. I had like a huge vampire phase when I was like super young. So yeah, I wanted to read Carmilla. But then from there, I'm looking at the Carmilla novella. It's like an edited version of Carmilla, but that came out like very recently in like the 2020s, I think. And then there's also like a web series, which I don't love looking media that's like not like written. So that was like really different, I guess. It's hard to analyze it because I don't have like a film studies background or anything. And then also a graphic novel. They're all like sapphic vampires, but like Carmilla starts in like the 1800s, and then like all of the other ones are recent.
And did you stick to Carmilla, or did you look at other, like Dracula, you said too?
Yeah, no, I was focusing mainly on Carmilla because it's like the first text that I look at. And then all of the other ones, like they're, the web series is called Carmilla, and then the edited novel is Carmilla, but just with like footnotes and stuff.
Oh, okay.
The graphic novel is When I Arrived at the Castle by Emily Carroll. That one's like not explicitly stated that it's Carmilla, but one of the things that is really weird actually about Carmilla is that she doesn't turn into a bat. She turns into like a black cat. And then like in the graphic novel, there's like a weird cat hybrid creature at the end. So it kind of alludes to Carmilla.
Cool. Okay. And you mentioned before the vampire type. What is the definition?
Yeah, I decided to pick Sapphic. Sapphic kind of alludes to women who love other women, and also like non-binary people. But there's some characters that I'm looking at, like in the web series Carmilla, where she is said to have like been in love with like a man previously. So I feel like by using lesbian, it would be like kind of erasing that. Mm-hmm. With like Sapphic, it's like broader and it like encapsulates all of the characters.
Interesting.
Or different versions. Yeah.
So what were kind of like some of the differences between the different renditions, I guess, of Carmilla?
The first one is like very interesting. It's very obvious that she is like queer, which I actually didn't expect. I thought you'd have to like read between the lines a lot. But like reading that, I was like, oh, like this is gay, but this came out like way like before. And did those people read it as queer or did they not read it as queer? Yeah, there's also like different opinions on that or whatever. But yeah, she is kind of like a classic like evil vampire, I would say, because she does feel affection for the main character who's like human is almost always Laura. But yeah, Carmilla's like basically killing her in that one. And so that's very obviously evil. But then in like the web series, Carmilla is almost like heroic. Like she saves like the day a couple of times. And so that's like the opposite, basically. And then in the graphic novel is also very interesting. That main character is actually not named. So I can't like call her Laura and I can't call like the vampire Carmilla either. But it kind of like alludes back to the original one where she's like, she's very clearly evil. There's like really cool like pictures of like, she's not even portrayed as a vampire, but like her skin will be like off and it's like really like weird and graphic. And there's like a lot of gore and stuff. And they end up like consuming each other in the end. So,
okay.
Interesting. And then in the edited version, Carmen Maria Machado, she like adds ways to like kind of view Carmilla as sympathetic, but also not too sympathetic because like she's killing Laura, but she's also killed like multiple other women before.
I love vampire stuff. And it was probably interesting too to look at the kind of history of the original Carmilla book and kind of what the ideas were around that book at the time, like you said. Yeah, it's very interesting. What were some of the challenges doing this research?
I guess like finding sapphic like vampire literature was like a bit difficult. The graphic novel by Emily Carroll is actually not in print right now. I think she's setting up with like a different publishing company. So I had to like search a lot of different sources and actually like the public library has one. And so like that's been saving me. The web series I actually watched when it was like coming out, which was like in 2016, I think. But yeah, I hadn't watched it since I was like small. So like watching that again was weird. And also just the process of like using like a web series and like writing about it has been like really like different for me. And then yeah, even like the edited version of Carmilla, like I had to like do a lot of research, go on a lot of different like websites and like really scroll through like good reads to be like, which one can I write about? How many are there? I thought there would definitely be like more. And I feel like I was kind of like hitting a block and like locating more sources. But yeah, no, finding those books was difficult. And then I also had to order the edited version because I also could not find that anywhere.
I love all like the hidden stories you find when through research. Yeah, I love that.
Yeah. Well, thank you for being with us today. I personally love vampires, so this was nice to talk to you about.
Thank you for having me.
That was Navrikil.
I can't believe Carmilla overdates Dracula by 25 years.
Yeah, and she was supposedly queer. Next, we have Jenica and Carolyn talking about their passion in youth and childcare. Hello, you two. Thank you for being with us today.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Can you guys just introduce a little bit about yourself and your program?
My name is Carolyn. We just finished our Bachelor of Child and Youth Care program. I'm Jenica Kurlak. Both of us are kind of headed towards other elements of our education.
Okay, you're expanding on your education pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah.
What are you hoping to do?
So I'm applying for a master in dance and movement psychotherapy.
Oh, very cool.
So hopefully starting that in the fall. So right now it's just like all the application process and kind of getting everything figured out for that. Yeah.
How about yourself?
I'm applying to internships to be a child life specialist in a hospital.
Oh, you guys, very cool. That's awesome. So can you tell us a little bit about the project that the two of you did?
Yeah, so the project started when our teachers, two of them from, what class was that?
I think it was Global Perspectives.
Yeah. Jenny and Kylie were like, we want to get more students involved with conferences for the field. Mm-hmm. There's always national and international conferences going on, and they've noticed not a lot of students show up to them or know about them. So they shared with us in class about like what prevents that, like asking us to give them some feedback of what would encourage more students to get there, what prevents us, that kind of thing. And I honestly had never really thought about it before. I think I felt like my presence wasn't really necessary or valued there because it feels like, oh, that's the established people and not the ones in school. So it was really nice to hear that that was not the case and they wanted us there.
I think a really big thing for us, though, was that we missed our typical Ireland trip that happens in third year because of COVID. They couldn't really make that decision very early. So when they mentioned this conference that was happening in Ireland, we both got a little excited and texted each other from opposite sides of the classroom, kind of joking that, hey, we should go to this. And then after class, we were talking to our parents about it, and they were like, oh, we'll pay for your flights.
Yeah, sweet.
That's pretty cool. So the joke kind of turned into a real thing really quick. So then we just had to think about something to present on because really you can present on whatever you want, which is really cool.
Yeah, because the other part of that is our teachers were telling us, did you know that students can also apply to present and share something they've been working on or looking into or something? So that was kind of a new perspective as well that intrigued us, I guess.
New opportunity.
Like, oh, okay, what do I have to share? And then we realized like a big part of what we have to share is that the child and youth care field is so broad, as in like it can go so many directions and lead into so many different specializations or be a really good prerequisite for a lot of areas in the, I guess, like health and communities, studies and professions, that kind of thing. So something that I think doesn't always get across to new students or people who've never heard of child and youth care before is that there are so many directions and there's a lot involved. So we thought it would be pretty cool to present on how we found our directions and what they are and what that process looked like for looking into those directions and how to actually go about it, because it's been a learning curve for both of us figuring that out. And we're going some pretty different directions than a lot of people. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's cool to learn about yourself. You're really learning about yourself through this, it seems like. And that's I think that's super cool.
And even too, you were talking about before how not a lot of students go to this conference. So by kind of talking about your direction with your education and stuff, maybe we'll make other students want to go and present as well. What was the conference name?
It was the Unity Conference.
The International Child and Youth Care Conference.
Oh, okay.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
And so what was some of the things that you talked about?
Yeah. So the title was Expanding and Diversifying Trauma Care Starts with Enabling Students to Embrace Their Unique Journeys. That's kind of really long, but that's the title that we felt suited the best for what we were trying to get across, is that because the conference was focused on trauma care. That was like their main topic for this year, this time. So we wanted to make sure we like connected what we were talking about with their bigger topic. And because trauma is something that comes up in most areas of child and youth care, that's kind of an underlying factor, is working with people who have had really adverse experiences. So again, in our different directions, we wanted to show that like there's a lot of ways to help people and to show up for them and bring support.
I guess individually, how are some ways that you would like to make some changes?
I would say for me that working towards going to work in a hospital with kids, like being in a hospital as a child is traumatic in its own self, and can be really scary. And on top of that, like you have some thing that you're there for, which can also be super traumatic. Like you could have had an accident or broken something in your body or whatever. So I think just trying to make that experience a little bit less traumatic and maybe normalizing a couple things, like making sure that they have play involved and kind of explaining those procedures that they have to go through so that it's less scary.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah.
I think for me, my biggest thing is like wanting to connect mental and physical health together and realizing that the nervous system is a really big part of that. Yeah. And that movement is a big way to like access the nervous system and kind of bridge those two factors. I had a lot of my own experiences with that and people working with me in how those are connected, and to like get over some of my challenges, I guess. We all have our own challenges. So yeah, that's what I'm really passionate about, is like looking at how to work with the nervous system through the body and through fun. Yeah, because play is really important for all of us. I think we very forget that sometimes.
I think it gets very easily lost as we get older.
What was your experience like, I guess, at the conference? What was that feeling like for you?
Terrifying.
Yeah.
It was just a really big room with a lot of like very important people, like people that have written our textbooks for classes and stuff. Oh, so like they're very high up there. And then for us to just walk in as students, like, yeah, we're just here. Oh, yeah, we're also going to present tomorrow.
Well, that's pretty important.
It was a little scary.
Yeah.
But I think very valuable for us to be there and to experience like relationships with the higher ups, I guess. And to kind of see like the atmosphere of a conference, and that like we're very valued as people there as well, and we're not really seen as like lower than everybody else, I guess.
Yeah. But I mean, I guess that also comes, it's a really relational field. So you would hope that the people that wrote our textbooks would also be that way, and they are. So that's really awesome.
Good.
Yeah, it was intimidating though, because you're like, oh, I don't want to say something wrong or like come across in the wrong way. I have something to say, but also being really sensitive to like, we are really new in our fields and we are still learning. So
gotta start somewhere.
Yeah.
That's always kind of tough. You don't want to step on anyone's toes, but you still have stuff to say. Yeah. Well, thank you guys. Thanks for being with us today. It was nice meeting the two of you.
Yeah, you too.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity.
Thanks for being on.
Well, that's all we have for today's episode of Research Recasted. If you want to support this podcast, you can visit Research Recasted on your favorite podcast platform to find new episodes every 2 weeks. Also, don't forget to check us out on Instagram at Research Recasted, where you can leave us a like, give us a follow, or send us a message if you have any follow-up questions from today's episode. This has been Research Recasted, a knowledge mobilization podcast, brought to you by the Office of Research Services and the Faculty of Fine Arts and Communications at McCune University. Funding for the podcast is partially provided by the Government of Canada through the Research Support Fund. Research Recasted is hosted and produced by Brooklyn Logician and Natalie Smattis. Music, sound design, and editing is by Natalie Smattis. Research, copy editing, and scripting is by Brooklyn Logician. And our executive producer is Hugh McKenzie.